Everyone, and welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I'm your host for Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues and the nonprofits and community leaders that are working to address them. Hopefully, you'll learn something new and be inspired to think about how you might make a difference with your deeds. So, here we are in the thick of the holiday season. But whose holiday are we celebrating? Most faith traditions have some kind of ceremony related to the changing of the seasons or other types of celestial transitions. But obviously here in Richmond, where our community hosts an annual Christmas parade right through the middle of town, we get a sense of how acceptance of Christian religious tradition is taken for granted as fitting for pretty much anyone. But whether or not we say Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas can be seen as somewhat superficial. As not that far away, people are literally killing themselves or killing each other in the name of religious identity. And looking at our society with a post-9/11 lens, religious intolerance has unfortunately made its way into the cultural mainstream. Here in Richmond, we have an organization that is working to address all forms of prejudice, including bias based on religious beliefs. The Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities has a long history in Richmond and Virginia, and as it looks to celebrate its 50th annual Humanitarian Awards this evening, I'm happy to have Jonathan Zuer in the studio today to talk about what Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities is all about and how we can each be more aware of religious diversity in the Richmond community and across the state. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you so much, Elaine. I'm happy to be with you.
It's great to have you here. Now, why don't you start, Jonathan, by sharing a little bit about how Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities got started?
Absolutely. I think our history is particularly interesting given this subject. Back in 1935, as the country was facing anti-Semitism and growing anti-Catholic sentiment after the presidential campaign of Alfred E. Smith, a group known as the Tolerance Trio were going around the country talking about the value of interfaith understanding. It was a rabbi, a priest, and a minister, and people usually laugh when they hear
that description. And where's the lawyer, right?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And they were invited to speak on the campus of Lynchburg College. And so on November 25th of 1935, over 1,000 people came to hear the Tolerance Trio speak. And they were so motivated by what they heard that they went and started local chapters of what was then known as NCCJ, the National Conference of Christians and Jews in Virginia. And their work was, throughout the years, helping to promote understanding across Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish lines, recognizing over time that there were a broader range of issues. And so the organization has evolved into our work today as the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities.
Oh, that's so interesting. I didn't realize that it had that long history from, you said, back in the 30s.
Correct, back in 1935.
So that's how it got started, and its roots really are in religious diversity, it sounds like. So what other issues do you work on, aside from just the religious issue?
Well, using interfaith principles, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, etc., the leaders of our organization recognized throughout the 50s and 60s and 70s that there were a broader range of issues around diversity and inclusion. And so today, as the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities, we are doing work around issues of race and class, gender, sexual orientation, ability status, all of the different identities that have the potential to bring our communities together or drive them apart. And we really believe that schools, businesses, and communities can be more successful when they're more inclusive, when they value the differences that individuals and groups can bring. And so we work on that broad topic, diversity and inclusion, with some focus on specific issues when a group or an organization is looking for specific support.
I see. So you use the word inclusion, and of course it's in the name of your organization as well. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between being inclusive and tolerance or appreciating diversity?
Absolutely. Well, diversity is the presence of difference. And so if an institution or a group or a community is diverse, it simply means it has lots of different people. It does not mean that those people are necessarily working together or getting along or valuing one another's perspectives or voices. If an institution is tolerant or a community is tolerant, in many ways, they're simply tolerating one another. Someone who we work with quite a bit often talks about, I'll tolerate a toothache. That doesn't mean I want to have a toothache. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that I value that. And so tolerance is perhaps a baseline. We really try to foster inclusion, and we think about moving from diversity to inclusion is really maximizing the potential of diversity. In schools, we think about this in a way that if I, as a student, feel included or respected or valued, I'm more likely to show up to class. I'm more likely to do my homework. I'm more likely to raise my hand. The same is true for those of us who are adults in the workplace. If I feel respected and included and valued, I'll stay late. I'll double-check my work. I will volunteer to take on leadership roles. And so the inclusion that can exist within an institution or within a community can actually be a value added to whatever the mission of that organization is.
So you're working with schools and different institutions in your work?
Absolutely. We're doing quite a bit of work right now on bullying and the academic achievement gap with schools, helping to train students as well as teachers to be able to create more respectful climates. We have programming that connects us with colleges and universities, providing training to student leadership groups, resident assistants, orientation advisors, etc. We have professional development for businesses and nonprofit organizations that is helping them to think about recruitment and retention of diverse employee groups. Mm-hmm. And then lots of community programs, dialogues, the Unpacking the 2010 Census Initiative, for example, that are helping our communities to be stronger and more respectful.
What was that program you just mentioned, Unpacking the 2010 Census? What was that?
This was a major initiative that the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities partnered with Hope in the Cities on. Dr. John Meeser has been doing research over the years on Richmond's demographics, on shifts along lines of race and class, and the history that helped to bring us there. And so VCIC and Hope in the Cities, with support from the Community Foundation and others, was able to train a group of nearly 40 facilitators who went out across our region leading presentations and dialogues to look at the current demographics based on the 2010 census and the history, how we got to this point, as well as potential interventions. We've had over 70 presentations and dialogues across our region this year, leading up to what we hope will be the Mayor's Anti-Poverty Commission report with some policy changes that can help to make our region more equitable across lines of race and class.
Right, and that obviously has to do with the issue of inclusion as well.
Most definitely, most definitely.
So those are some of the other programs that you provide. But getting back to the question on religious diversity, can you share a little bit about what you do specifically in that arena?
Absolutely. Our organization is, particularly at this time of year, called upon to be a resource for schools and for businesses that are thinking about diversity and inclusion along interfaith lines. So for schools, traditions become a big question mark. If they've always had lessons and carols at this time of year, do they continue to do that as their student population is getting more diverse? Are there classroom assignments, particularly at the elementary school level, where students are writing a letter to Santa or doing other things? What are the assemblies going to look like? Is the winter holiday concert inclusive mm-hmm. of different music, or is it primarily Christian music? And so our programming provides training and professional development to teachers around this, school administrators, as well as providing resource information and consulting. Similarly for businesses, as they're thinking about what are the displays that we might have or not have,
right.
What are our practices or policies, how do we guide our employees in terms of what they can put up at their desk or in their workspace. These are some really significant questions that become sources of conflict and struggle for a lot of institutions in our region and across the country.
Yeah, I can see why. I mean, I've heard people say, you know, get over the Christmas tree in the lobby. Christmas tree has nothing to do with religion. It's just about this time of year. But then I also hear people say, but that Christmas tree really represents the fact that there's a majority domination of our culture that maybe I'm not a part of. So where do you stand on that? Is it okay to have a Christmas tree? What do you think?
Well, I think one of the big principles that we use at the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities is making a distinction between intent and impact, or intent and consequence. So what I may intend to simply be an innocent demonstration may be received by other people as being offensive, being intrusive. And so it's important for institutions and leaders within those institutions to think about not just what I would want if I like a Christmas tree and I want a Christmas tree up, but to think about how that's going to impact our employees, our clients, our customers, etc. Similarly, I think there's a way in which these things can get downplayed unproductively. So some institutions will say you can have no demonstrations of your background or faith tradition. We don't want to see any menorahs, any dreidels, any Christmas trees, any crosses. None of that should be in the workplace. And I think that also goes to an extreme that's problematic, because you're asking people to downplay parts of who they are. And so in inclusive communities, we really help to focus on how do we value the differences, and not just in tokenized or ways or at certain times of year. If a school's going to be able to teach students about Christmas or to have Christmas events, what are we doing for holidays that take place throughout the spring? How do we learn about different religious traditions in the fall? What's going on for students as part of homework or as part of research projects? So rather than pretend that religion is not part of our public sphere, we see it as an opportunity to learn about different groups, to not preach a particular faith tradition or only advocate for one religious observance, but to learn about and value those differences that our neighbors might bring into a common space.
So you may say that there, like for example, at a school, there may be a reason to have a pageant that may include something like a carol that may be associated with a Christmas type of carol, but maybe that a school could counteract that, or counteract seems negative, but you know, introduce maybe earlier in the fall some lessons on, Rosh Hashanah or something.
Yeah, I think the principle that I shared earlier, if I feel respected and valued, then I'm more likely to be a full member of that school community. And so if we're asking people either to be the one tokenized person who has to sit out when everyone else is celebrating that religious observance, that's not including everyone. Mm-hmm. If we're also asking a lot of folks to pretend that they're not celebrating something during a particular time of year, that's also not inclusive or respecting them. And so finding that balance, and that's hard to do. This is not easy work, and I'm sure it was much easier when our neighborhoods were not as religiously diverse and schools said all of our students observe a particular tradition, and so we're going to only have that one event. But we also now have a real opportunity to prepare our students to live in a pluralistic world, and to understand and know about, as they go off to college, as they go into the working world, their neighbors, their classmates, their peers, their colleagues, in some new and exciting ways. And so this can be a value added rather than a burden, and that's the work that we're trying to help.
And that's
folks
where
move
you
towards.
All come in, is to help provide that support and guidance so that it is, like you said, a value add. I think that's an interesting way to look at it, because I can imagine it gets a little frustrating as an administrator or as somebody working in a corporation to try to appease everybody and make sure that everybody's happy all of the time. And, you know, you want to do what's best for the greater good, but what are the tools that you can bring into place to do that? So that's what part of what VCIC does.
I think our educational programs have really been seen as a resource to be able to have some of these conversations across employee lines or across student lines, and also institutionally to think about what are our policies and our practices that might lift up some groups and make them feel inherently included and valued and maybe even quote-unquote normal, and to make others feel abnormal or different. You know, when we talk with elementary schools in particular, where this comes up so often, one of my questions to administrators is, would you ever want to intentionally make one of your students feel left out? And across the board, 100%, they say, no, I would never want to do that. But maybe they're not thinking about the way that this tradition, this thing we've always done, is leaving a few students out. And so there's an opportunity not to then say we have to get rid of the tradition, but how do we incorporate other groups, or how do we make this one of several traditions we have throughout the year that allow all students to feel included and valued?
Great. Well, I see, as our community is certainly not going to be getting less diverse over time, that work becomes more and more important. Well, if you are just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. Today, I'm thrilled to be speaking with Jonathan Suhr. He is the president and CEO of the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities. We've been talking about religious diversity in this season marked by religious traditions. And Jonathan, what's your website where people can learn more about your organization?
Our website is inclusiveva.org, so like inclusivevirginia.org.
Inclusiveva.org, if you're interested to learn more about the services that they offer and how you might get involved. So thinking about religious diversity and inclusion, this time of year, obviously, that's a high priority. But does that come up in other times of the year as well?
I think it comes up in lots of different ways. We have heard a lot over the last few years about public prayer at government meetings. And our organization has been called upon on our website. Actually, one of the resources is a document called Guiding Principles for Public Prayer. So when I'm asked to, or particularly for members of the clergy, when they're asked to pray in public at the beginning of a municipal meeting, is their prayer oriented to one particular group? Or to a range of groups, thinking about some of the language that's used in God We Trust or other things. How do different groups experience that throughout the year? I think Ramadan changes through the Muslim calendar, but at different points, I think workplaces struggle with how do we provide appropriate accommodations to our Muslim colleagues and workers who may be asking for a particular time to pray or for reflection. And that can take place at different times of the year. And so these, I think, are exacerbated perhaps in December. They're they're thought about and acknowledged more, and it's important to have this conversation. But for the folks who are feeling marginalized, they're probably feeling it throughout the year, not just from December 1st to December 25th.
Oh, sure. Now, you mentioned that there's a resource on your website for public meetings, like the beginning of a city council meeting or something like that, or maybe an invocation at the beginning of some kind of ceremony. Do you have a sense of how often people to take a look at that information or even how people know that that's out there to take advantage of?
We think that it's getting increasingly used as a resource. We get calls from municipalities on occasion that have come across our website, one in particular that has actually been going through some legal action over the last few years, and they were looking to us to, as an organization, be a resource. So the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities is valued as an asset. And a few years ago in the Richmond region, after several public prayers that were not inclusive, a group of clergy came together, and our organization was one of the conveners to help them to think critically about how do I offer a public prayer. And for some folks, what they said is that I am praying for myself, and to do that with integrity means that I have to express it using certain words that might be exclusive to my faith tradition. Others said, but you're doing that in a public sphere, and so your prayer is not just for you, it is for a broader community. If you know for a fact that every single person in that community or in that room is of a particular faith, then you're praying for them and you can use your particular language. But if there's a chance that there's anyone in that room or anyone in that community who might feel excluded, then it's important and responsible to offer a broader public prayer that is able to value all of those differences that exist within a community.
Like a little G God references.
Certainly. And the guidelines that are on the website provide some specific phrases that can be used, some examples, those types of things that could be helpful to clergy or others who are offering public prayer.
I'm sure that's really helpful. You know, what about people that don't subscribe to any religion? You know, there are a growing number of atheists in our community, and they care just as much about being a part of the community and, maybe have more of a humanistic take on how they interact with others. How does these traditions take atheism into mind?
Well, I think it's an important thing for us to think about. I sometimes joke that in 1935, when the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities was founded, it was incredibly progressive to be bringing together Jewish, Catholic, and Protestant groups. And that was seen as very, very new and different for the time.
Yeah, revolutionary for that time.
As things have evolved, we have had the opportunity to be able to include Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, Sikhs, and certainly more recently, I think there's been more acknowledgement of folks in our community who identify as atheist or agnostic. And that's an important piece to consider when we talk about schools honoring different traditions throughout the year. That doesn't necessarily include folks who are atheist or agnostic. And so being able to acknowledge and teach about all of these different perspectives in the home becomes one opportunity, and certainly within school. If we're going to teach about one, I think we have a responsibility to equitably teach about the range so that we're exposing students to the diversity that's in their classroom. We're not, again, intentionally excluding one or more people.
Right. Okay. Because I can imagine, especially for the younger kids, and you get in a classroom and people start asking, well, what are you? Well, what are you? Mm-hmm. And if a child says, well, I'm not anything, then, yeah, immediately they're going to feel excluded.
Definitely. And that it's not just for children. So in the workplace, that exists as well, that this time of year, if a mass email is going out to all the employees saying Merry Christmas on it or Happy Holidays, that may not include the full group. And then that employee has a range of options, which may include complaining or doing other things, but also may just be withdrawing, and then the company is not benefiting from that person's contributions.
That's right.
Because I don't feel included or valued. And so these consequences affect an institution's bottom line.
So we're talking about both institutional approaches as well as interpersonal one-on-one approaches. I think it sounds like you do more in terms of institutional, but that inherently involves the one-on-one interpersonal relationships, right?
Yeah, I think we think about our work at Inclusive Communities as linking the head, the heart, and the hands. Mm-hmm. And so there is an intellectual component to the work. How do I understand these issues? There's a feeling component to the work. How have I experienced them in my own life, perhaps? How have I seen neighbors or family members experience them? And then there's a skill piece. And so that really inherently does link the interpersonal and the institutional. How do I feel individually? How do I deal with others on an individual level, but also what are those institutional policies or practices? And they work at really simultaneous levels. And so a coworker can say something, and I see that as being part of a company's policy, and all of a sudden I think very differently about that company. It becomes a real leadership challenge for institutions.
Right. How their people out representing them are maybe displaying their beliefs on their company uniforms or something like that might be an issue for policy.
Definitely.
Yeah. But then again, you did say, but you don't want to discount it. You don't want people to erase their identity because they're working in a particular place at the same time.
Sure. So how do we create as an institution opportunities for folks to express who they are and be their full selves in ways that don't infringe on other people? So if I respect you, Elaine, as a person, which I do, mm-hmm. then I would want to, if I know your background, I might act in ways that are respectful of your background. If I don't know your background, I might not want to inherently just force who I am onto you.
Make assumptions.
Mm-hmm. So I have a friend who would go around and wish people Merry Christmas, whether or not he knew that they were Christian. And I asked him at one point why he was doing that. And he said, well, it's the season and I'm sharing my celebration with other people. And I said, well, on your birthday, do you go around wishing people happy birthday? And he said, no. And I said, well, that's your celebration. Why would you not share that with other people? And we had a good laugh about it. But if I know that everyone is Christian, then absolutely I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas if I assume that they're celebrating. If I don't know, then I want to be a little bit more cautious. And so that affects mm-hmm. in terms of my job. If I'm wearing a necklace, do I wear it out or do I wear it in? Mm-hmm. How does that affect myself, my work individually, but also my role as an ambassador for a particular company?
Well, for some religions, there's no way to hide your identity in terms of how you wear your hair mm-hmm. or a headdress or something like that too.
Yeah, so some folks are able to cover or downplay, mm-hmm. others are not in terms of religious articles of faith. And companies and schools really have to think about how do we not ask people to take off a mm-hmm. Headdress, a yarmulke, other things, a turban, but how do we acknowledge the role that might play within that person's role within a company, for example?
Right. Well, I'm curious, you know, thinking about your work in this field, these issues are ages old. It's intolerance and lack of appreciating each other's differences. You know, it's been around for centuries, maybe since the dawn of time. But how do you keep motivated to do this in doing this work, knowing that it is a tough challenge and it's a topic that hasn't gone away? And when you look at the news from places like the Middle East, it seems like it's getting more and more harsh. How do you stay motivated?
I think there are legitimate challenges, and there are absolutely days where those of us at the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities might feel demoralized. But I think we also have seen some real successes and some real opportunities. When we've worked with schools, one middle school in particular, after a year of professional development, saw a 74% decrease in terms of discipline referrals from September 2010 to September 2011 based on professional development. They were able to create a climate where students felt included and valued. Teachers then didn't have to discipline and were able to teach, an amazing concept. So
That really is amazing. Say that again. It was at a middle school and they saw the incidents go down by 74%?
74% decrease in discipline referrals from September 2010 to September 2011.
Wow.
And so I think on those days where we might feel a little bit drained or a little bit frustrated or even overwhelmed by the magnitude, I think we can also show that this work has demonstrated outcomes of success. And we know that when individuals are able to learn and are able to acknowledge differences in respectful ways, that institutions can then change and then communities can see incredible success. And so I think at the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities, we're really looking to be able to ensure not that this is just touchy-feely kumbaya work, but that mm-hmm. we're really seeing tangible outcomes. And we're really proud that over the last several years we've been able to demonstrate those outcomes in our region and all across Virginia.
How else do you look to demonstrate your success? You shared with the school you're able to really measure that. Where else do you see success?
I think we see success in some of the policy changes that might exist, where an institution early on might be doing things the way they've always done things, and then after opportunities for workshops, retreats, forums, they're able to then start to see that maybe we need to change this tradition that we've had for many, many years that was not intentionally leaving people out, mm-hmm. but may not have accommodated the growing diversity that we're seeing. We also see a lot of student-led action plans coming out of our programs, and those are some of the most exciting, where students will lead professional development for teachers, for example, saying, these are some of the things that we've heard in the classroom, and this is how it has made us feel. We have seen students who have led anti-bullying efforts or pledge drives to help reduce bullying in schools. We've seen commitments that folks have made to be able to specifically focus on gender stereotypes, for example, awareness campaigns around sexual orientation and homophobia. And so lots of different things where we're trying, again, to link the head, the heart, and the hands. And Inclusive Communities is able to provide follow-up support after the workshop or the retreat or the assembly to be able to ensure sustainable success.
That's awesome. That's really incredible. Well, we're so thankful, Jonathan, that you're here in the community as a resource. Jonathan Sewer is president and CEO of the Virginia Center for Inclusive Communities, and he's been sharing with us some really important thoughts to keep in mind this time of year. Why don't you share your website one more time?
It's www.inclusiveva.org.
Thank you, Jonathan. We really appreciate your time and for the work you do.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate the conversation.
Well, thanks also go out to Jay Westerman for engineering today's show and to Jesse Johnson for volunteering on the board down here at Volunteer Power WRIR 97.3 LPFM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're so grateful to our volunteers and supporters, and you can add WRIR to your year-end giving list if you are so moved. Just visit WRIR.org to learn how to make a donation or to learn how to volunteer with the station. We could always use an extra hand. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and you've been listening to Inspire Indeed. We're a show that focuses on community issues through the lens of nonprofits and changemakers who are making a difference. Before I wrap up, I do want to share that there is an event coming up on December 18th, hosted by Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, the Virginia Organizing Project, and Virginia Consumer Voices for Healthcare. On December 18th, they're hosting a community conversation with Nuns on the Bus, to continue our religious theme. But it's all about Medicaid expansion and Virginia under the Affordable Care Act. So come on out on December 18th. Doors open at 5:30 in the evening, and it's going to be held at Second Presbyterian Church downtown at 5 North 5th Street. So you can visit Virginia Consumer Voices for Healthcare's website to learn more. Again, my name is Elaine Summerfield, and I appreciate your time listening today. I hope you learned something new today and are inspired to think about how you might make a difference with your deeds.